Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
And what is up, Gamecock Nation, GC Live, Monday episode of the show, Wes Mitchell, Chris Clark. I think, Chris, we're going to have a big show today. Just have a feeling, plenty to talk about, and I think we're going to have a lot of people on here from what I've seen. Gamecock Central numbers and Gamecock Central YouTube numbers have been through the roof over the weekend because you guys and girls are enjoying every second of this win, as you should. South Carolina beating Clemson 31-30 at Clemson. I think that adds a nice little cherry on top for South Carolina fans to be able to do it there, to end Clemson's seven-game win streak over South Carolina, to end what was a home streak that was just insane for Clemson. 40 straight home wins. Ridiculous. Gamecocks win those streaks, win the game, or end those streaks and win the game. And now we're on cloud nine going into what is going to be a very, very interesting and intriguing offseason. By the way, before we get going any further, I'm going to let everybody kind of start to get in there. Once we've gone live, the numbers sort of jump. Going to give everybody a little bit of time to get into the chat. Going to tell you about our buddy Clint Hammond. This show is presented by Clint Hammond of the Mortgage Network, clinthammond.com, 803-771-6933. Again, our boy Clint Hammond can help you find a mortgage, get you hooked up for whatever your situation may be, whether you're buying for the first time, whether you're an investor, any of the above. Clint can help walk you through that process, clinthammond.com. So, Chris, we've got the game itself to talk about, I think. We've got big picture stuff to talk about as far as the program, what these last 2 weeks and winning these games mean for them, the departure of Marcus Satterfield, the effects of the departure of Marcus Satterfield, with now you all of a sudden have an OC search going on, some transfer portal stuff is on the horizon. I doubt we even have time to get to that today. So for the most part, Clemson game, big picture, and then Satterfield slash OC search. If you wait around to the very end, maybe we'll tell you what we're hearing on the OC search. But Chris, got to start with the game itself. South Carolina's big win over Clemson. They're down 14-0. They're down by 9 points. They cut it to 2. They're back down 9. They cut it to 2. Just a it was one of those games where you just kept saying, it's a long game. It's a long game. It felt like they had to climb a mountain to win this game. They ultimately do that. They find a way. And I would dare say, the last 2 weeks, we have seen the Shane Beamer approach sort of be – if people had doubts about the Shane Beamer approach, I think a lot of those doubts have to kind of start to disappear. He kept this ship pointed in the right direction despite the negativity, despite the outside noise when they lost a couple of games and had some ugly moments, and they are rewarded with a big win, obviously, over Tennessee. And now a big win over in-state Clemson.
Yeah, I mean, the past 2 weeks could not have gone any better for Gamecock fans. Not only do you pull the upset over Tennessee, but of course, you know, the manner in which you do it. And then, Wes, just a sweet win over Clemson. We could list 20 reasons why this one was so sweet for Gamecock fans, but always good, just as a big picture view, always good to beat your rival if you're a South Carolina fan. And the manner in which they did it, you know, the game started not well for South Carolina. I mean, let's call it like it is. It's another game where you're on the road. South Carolina, with some exceptions, has not played very well on the road under Shane Beamer. There have been some exceptions to that, obviously. Haven't played well. and the kind of nightmare scenario happens for you in that you surrender a pick six. I don't know the official statistics, but it's been cited by many coaches. It is hard to win a game when you have a pick six like that. You get down 14-0, and there's kind of a feeling maybe for some of a here we go again. But, Wes, I actually, after South Carolina, was able to kind of settle into this football game. I know you and I were talking about that this weekend, this notion that even when South Carolina was down for much of the game, you're kind of like, they're in this. And even I think they're going to win this game because they continually answered the call. They answered the bell with some huge plays, some gutsy plays, offensively, defensively, special teams. You had a bunch of things go wrong for you, whether it was the pick six, fourth and one, you throw a bomb, you barely miss scoring, then you throw an interception into your own end zone. You have the safety, but you make, again, big special teams plays. You have Wes, the should have been fumble on the backwards pass that was not called as such, blown dead and called an incomplete pass, so no chance for South Carolina to A, get that football at that spot at a minimum, and B, to be able to return that possibly for a touchdown. So some things didn't go their way, but they just didn't flinch. And to your point about Shane Beamer and how he's built this program and what he wants the identity to be, I think it's exactly this. It's that for the first time in a while, I think you looked at these two teams and you felt like South Carolina was just better from a talent standpoint, from a coaching standpoint. We haven't been able to say that in a while, but this team was also more cohesive. They made some mistakes, sure, but they played more together. And so that's why all this stuff that Shane Beamer talks about, staying together, loving your brother, it may irritate some people who aren't South Carolina fans. Heck, maybe it even irritates South Carolina fans sometimes after, you know, they lose to Missouri or lose to Florida in the manner in which they did. But you see that it matters in that locker room, and there's no doubt that it helped propel them to be able to be in position to do what they did the past couple weeks, and some sweet moments for Carolina fans the last couple weeks.
Yeah, and like we said after the Tennessee game, man, enjoy it. Like this is why you follow a team. This is why you sit through those moments where your team's getting beat up and you know there's not a chance. This is why you still fly your flag even when Carolina is, has lost seven in a row to their rivals. So, you deserve, if you're a Gamecock fan, you deserve every second of enjoying this one. And, you know, the way this team has rebounded from what I would say was an even bigger low than the Missouri game. Like at the time, everybody looked at the Missouri game as being like a huge letdown. The more I looked back on that game and the more I looked at Missouri, I don't know, man. Like Carolina was favored, but that Missouri actually, especially matchup wise, they're a pretty good team. And that was just a terrible matchup for Carolina as far as the way the two teams are built. And they were kind of learning what they were going to be without Marshawn Lloyd, because obviously Marshawn Lloyd got banged up in that game. The Florida game is the low point of the season, I think. And then you rebound from that, bounce back, have this, blanket offense and the drop your you-know-what's defense. And I thought those were like, those are like funny sayings. But didn't it feel like they played that way? Like,
well, what? All right. So, what's the special teams mantra? Do you have anything clever for it?
Nah. I mean,
I have one, but I can't say it. It's even worse than the you know what it offense and the dropper you know what defense. It's even worse, I think.
Yeah. And I mean, Chris, they played that way. I mean, you're fourth and one from, backed up in your own territory, and you go play action, throw the ball down the field to a running back.
And not a little, what you see on fourth and one sometimes, the little rollout, and let's throw a 2-yard pass.
And how often, Chris?
A bomb.
Yeah, a lot of times you'll see that little rollout, and it's like a high-low, like they'll run the fullback or the H-back underneath, and they'll run the tight end over top of him, and then it's like, you have three very easy, clear options because most of the time the defense is all swallowed inside and the quarterback can either run it, dump it off to the short route, throw it to the little over route, and the over route itself is not, it's like 5 yards downfield. You know, it's not down the field. Straight play action, not rollout, straight play action, bomb to a running back. And, hey, that throw, oh, my God, like that was a dime. Like he – Spencer dropped that thing in there. Now, you hate for Carolina that it – that drive actually did not end up paying off. That was the drive where they had the interception in the end zone. But still, that was one of those – I know every fan on this thing, when they saw him drop back and look downfield, you're just like, what is it? And here's the thing about that call. If it doesn't work, everybody is bashing the heck out of that call. But, hey, let's talk about Spencer because to me, Chris, I don't care about the turnovers. Like, obviously, from a game-to-game standpoint, you want your quarterback to eliminate those things. I'm not saying that. But as far as this game itself, Spencer Rattler was the – Spencer Rattler was the biggest reason among the players that South Carolina won this game. Now, you can go through, we can go through a list, and hopefully we will, of a ton of guys who make huge contributions. But I thought Spencer Rattler was the difference. And looking back, I made this point going into the game. Last year was the outlier because Clemson didn't have to get good, great QB play or good to great QB play. The year before, they didn't play. But during six-game stretch, Chris, Clemson had by far the best quarterback.
By far.
When they got Deshaun Watson as a freshman playing on one leg, that's when everything turned in this series. So they win three with him. They win three with Lawrence. Carolina had the better, more confident, more decisive quarterback. And I think that was a huge difference in this game.
It was. And he just played with such a confidence and edge and a short memory. His body language was like almost comical during the game, Wes, when, you know, he threw the pick six and you could tell he's, you know, that was a bad play, you know, I know. And then he almost seemed shocked, you know, in some way that the other interception that he threw into the end zone, but you could tell it didn't faze him. He just almost like a cornerback, just forget that play, go to the next one. And again, I'll just go back to the phrase, like did not flinch. He did not let any of those plays beat him from a mental standpoint. And just look at the other plays that he made. I mean, the bottom line, were those bad plays? Sure. But he more than made up for those. And he showed why Shane Beamer and this coaching staff stuck with him. He showed why he used to be a five-star guy. He showed why he used to be on some – when he was at Oklahoma, was on some Heisman lists, Wes. The guy has unbelievable arm talent. The past 2 weeks, I don't know what it is. Give Spencer the credit. Give the staff credit. Give some – fate or luck or chance of credit, and or maybe all of it, but his pocket presence has been night and day, honestly, from what it was earlier in the season. He's just gained so much. There was some kind of switch that was flipped with Spencer Rattler, and so you can pick out so many throws. I mean, the one that Nate Adkins made on the one-hander was a phenomenal catch, but a throw that you fit in there, the 72-yarder to Juice. The touchdown run was a phenomenal play by Spencer Rattler. Just so many plays in the game. And I think, look, this team has taken on the personality of its coach with Shane Beamer with an almost irrational belief. Like, that's kind of a phrase I've been going back to, where it doesn't matter what the circumstances look like. And you know, just continue to answer the call. And heck, obviously the special teams did, with so many big plays that they made, whether it was the quote unquote simple, just making your kicks, punting the ball incredibly well, but also, you know, getting a couple turnovers on special teams, and then the defense coming through with some huge plays in the second half, especially.
Yeah, they had an edge about them, man. I mean, how about Jaheim Bell the last 2 weeks just out there delivering just shots just for fun, like the stiff arm that was that's not a stiff arm. That's I don't know what you call that. That's like a mush to the face. Like, just, I mean, guys are coming at him. He had an edge about him that I think we've seen this team, Chris, have that edge over teams that they're way better than. Like, we've seen them play with that little extra edge during the stretch where, you know, they beat up on Charlotte. Like, we saw them playing with that edge and that sort of level of confidence. We have not always seen that against like competition. Down the stretch, I don't know what flipped the switch, but they played with straight up belief in themselves. And so, you know, they flipped the switch. It was all there. And then, I don't know, Spencer looked like a guy who just didn't think he could miss a shot. Like a basketball player that is shocked when he misses. That's the way Spencer looked. And some of those throws, man, y'all, you know, if this is it for Spencer Rattler, y'all just let's go back and appreciate, like, there are not many guys that have put on the Garnet in black that can even attempt some of the throws. The throw he made, actually two throws sort of back-to-back to Josh Van, the windows that he put them in, and the one where Josh got hurt, where Spencer is on the move, feet aren't set, and he just flicks a dime to Josh. That's actually a great catch by Josh, too. I hated that he got hurt on it. But, man, the throwaway that got called for the safety, intentional grounding, dude basically did – he almost did like a pistol squat where you're like squatting on one foot, kept his balance, shifted his weight, and threw the ball harder and further than most people can do standing up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like you said, the run, the touchdown run, that's maybe the most athletic run he's had at South Carolina in terms of making people miss. And it kind of had some Steven Garcia vibes to it when he smelled the end zone, I feel like. But just I felt like the entire Rattler experience was on display the last 2 weeks.
It was, man. And I mean, that's the thing. He's had so many good throws in like his best games, especially the past couple weeks, that you almost forget about some, or you just, it's like casual for him. You know, it's almost hard to appreciate just because he makes it look easy. You know, even the plays, I mean, we've talked about this notion. I mean, some of his best throws this season haven't even hit, whether it was just like that was a great throw and the receiver didn't haul it in, or it was slightly overthrown, but wow, what an incredible arm. But this just shows when it all comes together, you know, what it can look like. And I mean, look, that fourth and one play, how much pressure is there on that throw? Juju McDowell, I think, by the way, Wes, I think that was Juju's only offensive snap of the game. Here, trot out here cold, and you know, we're going to line up in this formation, and we need you to just run a go route basically on a safety and beat him and catch this ball over your shoulder. But I mean, that's an amazing throw. Just so many great things. And he's just playing with so much confidence at the end of the year that honestly, it leaves you wishing that this was like the midpoint of the season, because you just kind of want to see where it could go from here and what he could do next. But as it is, it is the end of the regular season. And like you said, if we don't know yet, I mean, that's been a common question. We don't know yet if it's the end of the line for Spencer or not at South Carolina, but it has really been enjoyable to watch at a lot of points this season, but especially the past couple weeks. And he's definitely etched his name in Gamecock lore for that performance on Saturday.
Well, I was about to say, you know, you saw last week, he sort of, you know, he admitted that he part of his goal here was to sort of leave a mark at South Carolina. I dare say Gamecock fans will never forget how things went the last 2 weeks. And, you know, Chris, we got all offseason to talk about the offseason, but it is worth mentioning how much momentum this program can now once again potentially go into the transfer portal window, the now an OC search, which, you know, we'll get to a little bit later on. I feel like there's a lot more ammo for success in those things coming off of what has happened the last 2 weeks than there would have been if it was the alternative. You know, you drop the final three games, you're 6-6, low bowl. You're kind of having to manufacture some juice, basically, versus you're really one of college football's national stories at this point. So I got to think there are going to be some OCs. There are going to be some transfers, you know, on the field as well. They're going to be highly intrigued by Shane Beamer's program.
Yeah, I mean, you could not put a price on the publicity that they've been able to get the past couple weeks with some nationally televised games. I mean, everybody was talking about, you know, the A-team of Herb Street and Fowler being in town for the Tennessee game. And so the folks that were at that stadium or just watched on television or the recruits, there were a bunch of recruits on the sidelines and in the stands for that game, Wes. They were treated to a phenomenal atmosphere and a phenomenal win for South Carolina. And then, you know, the next week you go turn around and you win that game on the road and pick up a lot of national accolades. And it is something you can point to if you're Shane Beamer. I mean, look, this is a team that has taken kind of blended the old and the new. There's no doubt there are a lot of really good players left on this roster for Shane Beamer and his staff. There's a bunch of them. There's also a bunch of players that probably had a chance to be good, but for whatever reason did not develop previously. Now they have developed. I mean, the things you can think of, I mean, Darius Rush, Trey Kenyon even, who's kind of like an unsung hero type, and then merging the new. So Spencer Rattler, Nate Adkins, Juice Wells, guys that have been brought into this program by Shane Beamer and his staff, and just merging all those and creating, you know, the product that we've seen. And so I think they've got a lot to sell on the trail, you know, to transfers. Hey, you can come in and have an impact like this. They've done a really good job of navigating the portal the past two cycles, really. And being able to point to something, Wes, like the fact that they're one of two teams in the country this season that has wins over two AP top 10 teams. Michigan's the only other one. Michigan looks like they're ticketed for the college football playoff. And South Carolina at this point is still a program that hopes to get there one day. But winning games like that, and then what you said, the key thing, taking that momentum into the offseason and capitalizing on it, if they can do that, then could be some exciting times ahead. You know, a lot to sort through in the offseason, coaching moves and, you know, attrition off the roster, transfer portal, all sorts of different things, but a lot of good vibes certainly heading into the offseason.
Yeah, and man, I think we talked about this coming into this season. There are very few creative media teams and very few head coaches, I think, with the better skill set to capitalize via social media, you know, off of this. Now, it's very difficult to manufacture it yourself because we've seen how fans start to react. If you're not winning on the field, that stuff just – it just comes across – like it just thuds, basically. Like it doesn't get – the positive chatter, the positive engagement that you want it to if you're not winning on the field. However, if you are winning on the field, if you have some juice on the field, Justin King, his team, and then, of course, Beamer himself on social media, they were the transfer portal darling last year, one of probably five or six teams that I would say you could argue did the best in the portal. I'm expecting more of the same, man. Like, I think there's going to be a great story to sell at South Carolina, and I expect they're going to hit the portal hard and probably have quite a bit of success with it. But I'm starting to get ahead of myself. I do want to focus on the here and the now. And South Carolina, let's see. So number 20 in the country, by the way, now. New polls came out. Number 20 in both polls yesterday. Let's see. Kai Kroger and Marcellus Dial both win SEC Players of the Week. Let's see. Kai was the actual SEC Special Teams Player of the Week. Marcellus was co-defensive player of the week. So a little bit of news there. But let's talk about a few more guys in this game that were obviously instrumental in the win. And those two guys right there is a great place to start, Chris. Kai Kroger, I feel like we've said this multiple times in his career, one of the best punting performances I've ever seen. And then Marcellus Dial, I mean, they kept firing away at him. He kept producing incomplete passes. Finally got him a pick there at the end. And this is someone that had to be special to, Chris, being from the upstate, winning that game. And, you know, a guy that was kind of the third of that trio, the third person on the list with Darius Rush and Cam Smith, he was asked to step up when they moved Cam Smith back to nickel. That was putting some pressure on him to go defend. It felt to me, Chris, like Clemson kind of went after him a little bit. But he was up to the task. So I guess we'll talk about Kai in a second. How about Marcellus just hanging in there and locking down his side?
Yeah, man, looking up some PFF numbers for context to kind of see, you know, what they think about what our eyes saw. You were exactly right that they went after Marcellus Dial. 31 snaps total in the game. They targeted him 13 times. Just one reception for 11 yards. And I think, Wes, because he has one touchdown on his ledger here, surrendered. I think that was the play where they caught Carolina in man coverage. Antonio Williams caught the ball in the end zone on like the corner route. I think Dial, it looked like there was a miscommunication. But here's the point. 13 targets, one catch. And when he was on his guy, Clemson wasn't doing much. 13 targets, had the interception, and officially credited with three pass breakups. So a great game for him. Woodruff native, definitely awesome to see. Look, it was another game in which we knew. Clemson not as good as Tennessee was in terms of the overall receiver picture or passing game prowess. But we knew that this was a game where South Carolina was going to have to try to load the box, devote a lot of resources to the run. And so that put the onus on Carolina's defensive backs, corners, nickel, safety, and even linebackers in pass coverage to go out there and do a really good job. And they gave up some plays here and there, sure. But, man, did a really good job. I think kind of enticed Clemson, quite frankly, to get away from running the football with some of the looks that they showed, entice them to try to throw the football. It's probably pretty tempting as a play caller to try to go back to that well, but they were able to make plenty of plays. And I'll go back to that second half, Wes. You know, you look at what South Carolina's defense did there. What was it? I think three and out, interception, a five and out. I mean, they did a really, really good job in the second half defensively, and Dial was a big part of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And a guy with more eligibility left, I think it's kind of interesting. You have two upperclassmen in Cam Smith and Darius Rush who, you know, have carried the way in a lot of ways in the secondary at cornerback, of course. You know, both those guys technically have some eligibility left, but Darius walked on senior night. Cam, you know, I think when you start getting talked about as a first-round guy to start the year, the assumption is you plan for losing both those guys, even though neither one is given like an official announcement or anything like that. Point I'm trying to get to, Marcellus Dial, it's always interesting when you have guys finish one year on kind of on the up and you say that's something for them to build off of going into next year. And I imagine, Chris, Marcellus Dial, you know, bowl game and then going into next season is going to be in a position to sort of springboard off of this and be one of the guys really that South Carolina counts on at cornerback. This was maybe lost in all that as well, Chris. OD Fortune played a bunch of snaps in the second half of this football game. Darius has been, you know, kind of banged up, playing a little banged up. And, you know, he, I think, has played pretty well down the stretch. So, you know, those are two guys. I think South Carolina, you know, again, we'll see what happens in the portal, but they're going to be counting on those guys next year. So it's never a bad thing when you have guys sort of starting to play to their potential at the end of 1 year. We saw that with Darius Rush last year. He sort of started to take it to a next level, kind of springboarded off of that going into this year.
I mean, and that to me, man, with you going through some of what we saw last year and this year, I mean, what a job Torian Gray's done, you know? I mean, he last season, the Gamecock secondary definitely surpassed expectations. And so part of that was, you know, a guy like Darius Rush really progressing as a corner, a guy that came to South Carolina as a receiver and switched positions and played some safety and played some corner and settled in, really started developing last season. And now it's taken another leap forward. You look at Marcellus Dial. He's done. He's certainly progressed. Cam Smith, probably the most naturally talented corner on the team, right? But he has played lights out this season. And then Carolina's got two freshmen in the secondary, Nicky Minwori, DQ Smith. Those guys help you make plays to beat two top 10 teams in a row. So you're doing something right there. You know, last season, this season, really, really good job by Torian Gray in terms of player development. And I think it's a nice story to be able to sell to high school prospects and portal prospects, like you said, Wes, because you can point to your track record of development. But it's also you can point to opportunity because it looks like they're going to have some snaps to give next season to a big time corner or a big time nickel from the transfer portal.
Yeah, no doubt, man. I think and Cam showing the versatility this year to be able to play all over, play inside, play outside, was really, I mean, look no further than the approach the last 2 weeks. Hey, their best receivers in the slot. Let's put nine there. Let's go play some man coverage and get after it. I think that goes right back into the mindset, the drop you know what mindset on the South Carolina defense. By the way, have you seen, Chris, and our boss may prefer me to push people to the Breaking Tees shirt that says sure. Breaking Tee brand that says drop your stuff there. But have you seen the shirt that Cam is selling?
I have not, but I'm really glad that he's selling one. Any chance of putting it on the screen?
Yeah, let me effort that. Y'all go buy this shirt for real. Like, this is not a paid endorsement by any means. Go buy this shirt. It is awesome. Somebody needs Cam to tell Smith. Cam he needs to put his real name as his Twitter. I can't find this right now. Y'all hang tight. I'm gonna effort that while Chris tells us how impressed he was with Kai Kroger.
Dude, it is I just saw the shirt. That's hilarious. Kai Kroger it is incredible. I mean, so first of all, let me, before we go, because I'll probably have a monologue on Kai Kroger before I forget. So Mitch Jeter, his performance has gotten lost. This dude has literally hit every single field goal this season. Now, he won't win the Lou Groza Award because he hasn't kicked 35 field goals this season. But the ones that they've trotted him out for, he's hit. And it's not like they've all been 29-yarder chip shots. He's gone out there. He's hit some long ones. He's hit all varieties. And I don't care if it was an extra point on Saturday. I think it was a 31-yard field goal. That's some pressure. He goes out there, calmly executes in the fourth quarter, hits a kick right down the middle of the uprights, and ends up being the game-winning score for South Carolina, and the rest of the team did the rest. But amazing performance by Kroger. I mean, it was almost like he had like a remote control where he was just controlling the trajectory of the ball. Oh, drop here, stop here. Great coverage by the teams. Pete Limbo has done an incredible job with how he's coached his coverage teams, his return teams. Marion Brown had a big return on a punt return. Wes.
Clemson. That's probably got forgotten a little bit, I feel like, that play.
It definitely gotten forgotten. There's just so many good plays in the game, but Kroger was unreal. I mean, that performance, you know, we talked about South Carolina's offensive performance not being replicable from Tennessee to, like, hardly ever again. I don't feel like Kai Kroger's punting performance. You're right. We've several times, wow, what a performance by Kai Kroger. That one, even by his standards, was almost unbelievable. So phenomenal performance by him. And yeah, I mean, just well deserved. If he doesn't win the Ray Guy Award, I haven't looked at who else is on the list or the stats. I can't imagine that there's anybody better in the country than him right now.
How do you feel about the shirt here, Chris?
Well, I mean, I love it. No adjustments.
Yes, that's pretty awesome. That go check that out. Go buy a Cam shirt. I'll just unpaid endorsement. Go buy it. That's what NIL is all about.
it's phenomenal.
I don't know who designed it, but well done to whoever that was. But yeah, man, special teams have been awesome, and I think that we have talked about special teams all season long. But still, probably not enough compared to just how good they've been and how consistent they have been throughout, you know, the entire season. So, all right, Marcellus Dial, Kai Kroger, Nate Atkins. We got to show some Nate Atkins.
Please.
Love.
I'm here for that.
Man. So, we knew coming in, from what we had heard, that Nate had good hands. Like, that was actually one of the things we heard in preseason camp is like, hey, and it's one of those things kind of like, hey, don't forget this guy can, like, catch the ball too. Mm-hmm. And, but you're kind of thinking, well, you got all these other weapons on offense. He probably is going to get lost, but then, you know, maybe he'll be that guy that makes a few catches when everybody else is covered type thing, or when the defenses are focused on everybody else. But that one-handed catch against Clemson and the moment that it was in is it incredible, man. And it was actually a good ball by Rattler because I think only Atkins could go catch it. Rattler climbed the pocket one of the other times in this game where he avoided pressure, climbed up into the pocket, put the ball where only his guy could catch it, even though it took a miraculous catch. Is that the catch of the year? Put you on the spot.
No,
chat room, tell us if there was a better one. But, I mean, might be, for real.
Well, and the degree of difficulty was unreal. If I'm remembering correctly, to go up with one hand anyway, right? But I think the Clemson defender got a hand on the ball and, like, moved it on the way down, and he still brought it in. Got slammed down on his back and had to be so much adrenaline at that point, Wes. Like, he got up, celebrated a little bit, and then was like, ooh, yeah, I'm a little hurt. that hurt. But you're right, dude. I remember watching practice, and we had heard that, like you said, about Nate, that he could really catch the football. I remember the first time I watched him catch a pass, I was like, wow. Like, just natural, like, soft hands. And when you look at him, he almost looks like he should be a guy that's not a natural pass catcher. Like, just his size, he looks more like a fullback, H-back type. And you're like, he probably, like, fights the ball a little bit, but extremely natural hands. And he's shown that. So he's been critical, whether it's just blocking in the backfield, making an amazing catch like that, catching some short passes that have moved the chains for South Carolina. That's been critical the past couple weeks. It hasn't been the feast or famine of a deep shot or throw a bubble screen and you're relying on a guy to make you miss, but they've been able to find some yardage and just take it with some short passes. And Atkins has been, you know, a piece of that. And then, of course, you know, the special teams play at the end of the game, just an absolute monster play.
We talked about this on the 107.5 show, man. I'm convinced that obviously Pete Limbo thinks of everything. And to go back and tie this in, special teams plus the kickers, how about the form tackle by Mitch Jeter on the Clemson special teams trick play, if you will? We got more to get to, but I've got to throw my theory out on this show as well. Because are you with me on this?
Oh, yes.
There is no doubt in my mind that that Dabo Swinney and the Clemson staff put in that little Giants play just because they've heard all about Beamer ball and Limbo ball all season long. They wanted to prove, you know, they have great special teams as well, because that's the Clemson thing to do. You're not – South Carolina can't have nice things. The other thing that I thought that Dabo said that I thought was actually a pretty good point, he said, and I'm paraphrasing, he said in the press conference, like, basically, we're not entitled to win the game, talking about Clemson. And didn't it kind of feel like a lot of their fans have watched them win this rivalry game so many times now that I think Clemson fans just thought they were supposed to win? Like, this is what's supposed to happen. We're just supposed to beat South Carolina. It's not supposed to be close. Doesn't matter who they have, we have. This is just what happens. We win games at home. And so I think that's kind of, if you're South Carolina, you're not just fighting. That's why I said earlier, you're climbing a mountain. You're not just fighting the on-field one-on-one battles. You're fighting sort of the stigma and the perception. And the Clemson, I'm sure, goes into this game, and there wasn't a soul on that Clemson team that thought they were going to lose this game. So you're battling that throughout. And to be down by 14 points, to be down by 9 points for a lot of the game and keep fighting, I think is massive. But yeah, dude, I am convinced that and that play cost them, obviously. I'm convinced that was, they were probably going to put it on Twitter with the headline Beamer ball as the caption after they scored off of it in, you know, in their alternate reality. But
yes. I mean, I know you said that earlier, but like, I just visualized that on Twitter. They run that little scrum and somebody runs untouched for a touchdown and they put Swinney ball or, you know, whatever it is that they would put up there and have a lot of fun with it
or something.
Yeah. No, I mean, they got outplayed on special teams. They got outplayed in a lot of spots. And I think so. Number one, your theory will go in the history book that is written, and it won't go as like Wes Mitchell's theory. It'll just be like
fact.
Here's what happened in the game.
Yeah.
Dabo Swinney, because of his ego, put in this play or whatever, you know?
Yeah. So, they've probably been practicing it for 3 weeks, getting it ready for this game alone. Anyway. All right. Who else? Offensive line. Mixed performance a little bit. Running game still not there, but I thought the difference, we talked about this earlier as well, but I want to get to it just because not everybody listens to both shows. But man, Chris, the fact that, yeah, there was some pressure on Rattler. Yes, Clemson got to him at times. Yes, he had to escape at times, but it didn't feel like just that complete dominance up front that for much of that 7-game win streak, Clemson's defensive linemen just hammered Carolina up front. There was no chance whatsoever. The only outlier being the game when Jake Bentley just went off. Carolina had that great game plan. They really messed up Clemson as far as their get off on the line by changing up the snap count, basically, and doing some different things with tempo. But other than that, for the most part, Clemson's defensive line has just been dominant in this series. They still were, to an extent, against the run. Great adjustment by Carolina just to say, hey, we're doing quick passing game to the perimeter as the extension of the running game. But the O-line not only played very well last week in pass protection, they gave Spencer Rattler and company just a chance this week, which was, I think, all he needed.
Yeah, and, you know, I think, look, going into this game, we knew Clemson had a good defensive front, and so South Carolina didn't do a lot in the running game. There were times in which they did just enough, and there are certainly times where they were stymied, but not a big surprise. You know, Marshawn Lloyd played actually probably more snaps than I anticipated, Wes. I think he played 30-something snaps in this game. But, look, definitely not a 100% healthy Marshawn Lloyd. Not a 100% healthy Christian Beal-Smith. Jaheim Bell still saw plenty of snaps at the running back position. We knew going in that South Carolina's better matchups were through the air. Put the ball in Spencer Rattler's hands. Let your receivers go make some plays in the open field. Run the ball at times just to keep things honest and see if you can make something happen there. So try to get creative with some of it. Clemson's only surrendered one rushing performance over 100 yards for an individual player, and that was against Notre Dame, who did a really good job there. So you knew that what you got out of the running game, to be frank, I mean, I don't want it to seem like a defeatist attitude, but just being realistic, you were going to need to put the ball in the air to be able to win this game. And so looking through the numbers, Wes, I mean, three sacks, which I think you said earlier, Spencer was hit six times, 19 pressures. That's a good number. But South Carolina, even with some of those pressures, one of them, Spencer Rattler, steps up, runs for a touchdown. Some other ones, he steps up in the pocket or breaks the pocket. So he was able to do a good job largely facing that rush. Clemson did have to blitz some. They've got really good, you know, edge guys. They sent some linebackers. Looking here at some of the numbers, some of the rushes that they sent and some of the blitzes that they did get home were from DBs or linebackers. So it's not like they were able to just line up their four and just dominate South Carolina like we've seen sometimes in the past.
Yeah, man, I think that was a huge difference. Just feeling like even when they were down, you kind of felt like Carolina's offense was going to be able to move the ball and had a bunch of explosive plays, which is always a key indicator for winning. I was reading some stuff today. I mean, maybe quite literally the biggest indicator for winning games is if you can create explosive plays, and they were able to do just that. Somebody's asking for the Cam Smith shirt link. CamSmithShop.com is where it's at. So you can go check that out. They are for sale right now. CamSmithShop.com. But let's see. Obviously, defense, special teams held on there at the end. Carolina gets one first down, salts it away. Gamecocks win. Massive victory. Any way you shake it, both perception, stopping the streak, in-state recruiting, overall just program, you know, thoughts from people outside looking in. It all, I mean, you can barely put into words just what this means for South Carolina. Then the offseason hits, and Chris, the offseason is already like a runaway train right now. We were all tracking this, like everybody sort of put the pieces together, like, could Marcus Satterfield go with Rule to Nebraska? I think everybody knew that was going to be a possibility. It became a much more interesting conversation when you kind of try to square up what Satterfield did the last 2 weeks versus what the offense looked like for a good part of the 2 years. And I still tend to think this was maybe a best case scenario, mutual, you know, Satterfield gets a fresh start. I think it's one of those things. It had gotten so basically toxic as far as the relationship between him and the fan base, even with the last 2 weeks. I don't know if it was savable. It's kind of like a relationship where the divorce is just probably going to be better for both sides. And he'll get a clean landing spot there at Nebraska. South Carolina can kind of reset and go hire an OC. Do you think this is kind of just a mutual situation and just a mutually beneficial situation maybe for both sides, Chris?
Yeah, I think you nailed it, man. Just kind of long term. Look, there are a lot of great positive feelings to the point. I think, man, even some of Marcus Satterfield's most ardent critics are probably sitting here after these last two games going, you know what? What's happening here? What could things look like? Would this change the equation? But the reality is, look, we don't know how the bowl game would have gone if Marcus Satterfield were still in the fold. Lots of considerations, but let's say it goes poorly, or let's say the bowl game goes well and it's game one against UNC. The first game in which South Carolina scores 10 points or no points or whatever it may be offensively, you're kind of right back to square one. And so we know that Beamer and Satterfield obviously have a long time relationship, but Marcus Satterfield's worked for Matt Rhule, with Matt Rhule, at three different stops. Temple as his offensive coordinator, Baylor as his director of recruiting, and then as a position coach, tight ends coach. And then with the Carolina Panthers, Rhule hired him there as well. So obviously the two have a close professional, personal relationship. So I think it just lined up, Wes. You know, before Matt Rhule was fired with the Carolina Panthers, or before we knew for sure that he was jumping back into a college gig, we were all kind of wondering, where does this thing go? You know, like, how does it, if it ends, how does it end? But as it turned out, the stars just kind of aligned, right, for a fresh start for both parties. So I think where South Carolina fans can land with all that is that it's probably good, like you said, Wes, long-term for both, and that it's a fresh start and it's a reason to be excited, you know, because you got two amazing games here at the end of the regular season, two cathartic games that were a whole heck of a lot of fun. And now you have another layer to what's going to be a very, very interesting offseason and a chance to go out and hire an offensive coordinator, and could be a lot of really interesting names in the mix.
Yeah, a fresh start there on the offensive side. I will say this. I thought this was an excellent point by actually my buddy Adam Miller, who is on our site. He posted this earlier. And Chris, so we posted a video on YouTube after the news broke, you know, with me and Kendall Smith. And I was amazed at the number of people on there who were just saying things as if they were facts in the comments, you know, about he did not call the plays, or somebody else was calling the plays from the booth, and just all this stuff, passing it off just like it was, you know, 100% fact. My question about this conspiracy about somebody else calling the plays is, who in the booth was calling the plays, guys? That's what I want to know. Who up there was calling the plays? Because everybody keeps repeating that. Who was it? And to Adam Miller's point, shouldn't the secret play caller be a very easy hire for the OC? Like, if
past 63 points and 31 points. That's a pretty decent resume, especially if
Kevin,
you can get everybody
Freddie
to come
Kitchens.
Back, right?
Freddie Kitchens was on the sideline for the game, so Freddie Kitchens was not in the booth calling plays.
So Kitchens, and I'm pretty sure if there are any high school or college or NFL coaches here on the show, please correct me, and I'm dead serious. If Freddie Kitchens called the plays the past 2 weeks, it'd be one thing that he didn't have a play sheet. Not all coaches don't have play sheets. I think Paul Johnson at Georgia Tech didn't have a play sheet. Just call a guy over, tell him to play. Mike Leach's is like this big, you know. I think it would be the first coach in history that would be the offensive coordinator without wearing a headset.
Yeah.
See, yeah, I mean, okay. I'm serious.
So I'm with you. And by the way, response from Lowkey and Hunter Johnson. Sat calls the plays from the sideline. Yeah, I know that. I've watched every single game. The response is to people saying he's getting the calls from the booth. So who is giving him the calls from the booth? So it's not the gotcha moment here.
So, if somebody's
magically shooting them down from the stars, who is it, is the question. And Freddie Kitchens was not wearing a headset, so it's not Freddie Kitchens. Yes, Satterfield has been on the sideline all season long. Everybody listening to this show knows that. The question is, which person that is the best play caller in the history of football is beaming them down to him, and why hasn't he been hired yet? That's my question. No, he's your hire.
Well, and it would be, you know, there's a lot of different versions of this that's been passed around, and, you know, tweaking some things and a change in approach could be true. The point that I think we're trying to make is, like, yeah, that's really it. Like, who was it? So somebody called in the plays, a mystery person, because we can't say it was somebody. We don't know who, but it was somebody. You can't say that, because if your information is somebody was calling the plays, you have to be able to say that it was somebody. It didn't just get just beamed into the brain, you know? And why was it called? And then he looks at the play sheet and then he signals it in. That's a lot of steps to go through.
Yeah, that's a lot of steps for an offense that actually was getting the plays in fairly quickly, I feel like. I don't know. Again, it is what it is. I've been amazed at the number of people just passing stuff off like it's absolutely freaking fact. Let's give the guy credit. Yes, there were adjustments to the play calling itself. It was a more aggressive game plan, but let's at least give the guy the credit for the last two games. We can at least give him that, I think. Chris, what type of OC do you think the Gamecocks should hire?
I think I would go back to what we were talking about earlier in the year when South Carolina was struggling so much offensively. I think it was after the Missouri game for sure, some after the Florida game. You got to find a quarterback-friendly offense, and that sounds like a broad generalization, and it is, partially on purpose. But seriously, you got to be able to look for – A, you want an offense that scores points. I don't think that it's good enough to just be able to say, I'm going to run this type of offense with a name guy. It doesn't necessarily even have to be a name guy. That would help. But can you find somebody that can take the personnel you have on your team, make it a quarterback friendly offense, and really accentuate the strengths of your team? Right? When this team was struggling, we were all looking around going, why are Spencer Rattler and these receivers not able to pitch the ball around the yard more? And then we see Tennessee and Clemson and we say, oh yeah, that's what it's supposed to look like right there. That's what we need. And then just quarterback friendly from the sense of you want to be able to lure quarterbacks to play in the offense. And you want to make it easier on your quarterback to go out there and execute it. And really that, you know, you have to make that the case for your entire team, but especially for the quarterback. So that could cover a wide span, Wes, but I just think productivity and the notion that your offense needs to be quarterback friendly, that's the number one thing I think you have to look for.
Yeah, I think it's got to be QB friendly and it's got to be recruit friendly. Whatever that looks like, it's got to be something you can sell, right? Like it's got to be something that there's a little bit of flash to it, maybe even annoyingly so. Like there's got to be some, you know, you think about these offenses that have just come in and in one year really been able to get, like, you look at Tennessee, like, yeah, that offense isn't perfect, but they do obviously put up points and they get the attention of players. Players want to play in it. And to Beckham's point, I think you do got to maybe modernize the running game a little bit more and do some different things there to try and get the run game going a little bit more than what we saw consistently this year, particularly if you have a guy like Marshawn Lloyd in the backfield. You have a guy you can sort of build a really high quality rushing attack off of. We're about at the hour mark, Chris. Do you want to throw a couple names out there for the people that have waited 59 minutes and 11 seconds?
Yes, I will. I'll give a couple opening thoughts on the OC search with a caveat. And the caveat is please go subscribe to GamecockCentral.com. We enjoy doing this show with you guys. I know a bunch of you on here are already subscribers, so we greatly appreciate you. But we are going to be covering so much over this, not only this next week, but heck, the entire offseason. So offensive coordinator search, transfer portal window is opening, Wes, in less than 2 weeks. Recruiting, coaches can go out on the road starting on December the 2nd on Friday. It is going to be absolutely wild. So much to cover, and we do it all in-depth on GamecockCentral.com. So go visit us. Please subscribe. That supports our work and gets you access to everything. So with that out of the way, it is really, really early, Wes. So we don't have a handle on it yet. Nobody's hired. I don't even know yet, honestly, if it's safe to say that there's a front runner, front runners. There could be, but we have not been able to run that down. But a couple early names to watch. One is Garrett Riley from TCU. Now, to be clear, I'm not super high on the chances. He deserves to be included on hot boards and anything like that. This is a guy that's, you know, called an offense that's it's a college football playoff team right now. They're on that path. His next stop may indeed just be a head coaching position somewhere, but someone that was in the mix last time for a position on Shane Beamer's staff. So worthy of inclusion, because I think there'll be some, at least some checking done there. And then Kendall Briles is from Arkansas, is someone that a lot of people are talking about, has some ties to the staff. Coached with Justin Stepp for a year at Arkansas, has been several places and is considered a bright young offensive mind. So a couple guys to keep in mind there, and I'm sure the hot board will continue to grow and the information will continue to come in as this thing progresses.
Yeah, Will asking how quick would we expect it to play out. That's not clear either. I mean, there's two things. I mean, there's a lot of things at play, but there's two main things at play. One would be the side of it where, from a South Carolina perspective, much like with Rule hiring Satterfield, you want to make it move as quickly as possible, right? Like, you need to get this done. The other side is you don't know what timetable, what time frame the coach you're trying to hire is on at his current place. Is he, you know, does he have a big game coming up? Is there a championship game? Whatever. All those things can have an effect, but I imagine most guys in college football are going to be operating on a timetable of wanting to sort of, frankly, get to their new spot as soon as possible, because everybody knows 1 week from today, the 5th, the portal is flying open and everybody's going to need to have as many people in place as possible. So even if you're going to lose a coach, Chris, in a weird way, it's actually better to just go ahead and lose them and go ahead and start replacing them than to lose a coach next Tuesday or something, I think. So if you're Carolina, you don't have a huge buffer, but you do have a little bit of a buffer to operate here and go out and hire somebody new. By the way, I also want to tell you about our friends at Liberty Tax, big supporters of our show, 803-462-5576. Shout out to Larry and his team. They have offices in Irmo, Lexington, and Columbia, South Carolina. Tax season is right around the corner. We're going to be telling you about Liberty Tax throughout the lead into that, and then, of course, throughout tax season. But they don't just operate during tax season. If you're a business owner, you need someone to help you out with all of your payroll services or your bookkeeping or just any of the paper trail stuff that you don't really enjoy about owning or running a business, our friends at Liberty Tax here in Columbia can help you out with that. Again, 803-462-5576. Chris, good show, man. Appreciate everybody joining us. This was really good. I think big numbers there, so appreciate y'all all joining, hanging out with us. We're going to have updates throughout the week on Gamecock Central. We're going to hop back on GC Live, I'm sure, a couple times this week as well. We'll let y'all know the specific schedule. But, again, Gamecocks win, huge time for everybody to be happy, and should be a very eventful couple of weeks and then some on Gamecock Central. If you're not a subscriber, go check it out right now. We actually have a special deal going on. I lost it. Is it $10, Chris, until the 2023 season for new subscribers. So go check that out on GamecockCentral.com. Again, appreciate the support. Like, review, subscribe on all the podcast platforms. For Chris, I'm Wes. See you later.